Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hot 99.5, connected to the community. Here's Julie Morgan with today's community spotlight.
We just took a look at the schoolhouse. It's the last remaining schoolhouse, one-room schoolhouse for African-American students that was built in 1898. This has to have a lot of history. Tell me where it all started.
Well, it all started in 1866. And this was, you know, after the Civil War, Manhattan was a very rural, very lightly populated area, as was all of Florida, really, at that time. And the bishop for the Catholic churches in this area and all the way up to Savannah and down to St. Augustine decided that he was going to go to France, which is where he was from, and approached the Sisters of St. Joseph, who had a convent there and a mother house, and looked for volunteers to come with him to Florida to teach children who had been in slavery in this area in North Florida. And so he asked for volunteers. He got about 70 volunteers. He selected 8, and those 8 sisters came across the Atlantic Ocean in 1866, went to St. Augustine, where the mother house was built and where they lived and learned English, and they opened their first school in Florida there, in St. Augustine, in 1867. Manhattan was their second school, and so after they established the one in St. Augustine, they sent 2 sisters up here to Manhattan, and there was a little building on the property that is where St. Joseph's Catholic Church now is, and they taught white children and black children in that building and had mass there whenever the priest would come through. So it really started with the vision of the Bishop Varreau, who was responsible for this area in terms of the Catholic Church.
So they taught African-American students and white students. But it seems like that's something that probably could not have lasted, just based on the time.
Well, that's true. And it wasn't integrated education, of course, at that time. It was segregated. So when they opened this school, their letters reflect that they reported that they had 27 African-American children in school, and they had 51 whites. It was also serving the needs of the white children in the area. And they met at separate times a day. So they perhaps had the white children in the morning and the black children in the afternoon. And all of those children probably went home and worked at the farm, you know, after school. But you're right. I mean, Jim Crow laws started to develop and so forth. And there was even a time in the very early 1900s that a couple of the sisters in St. Augustine were arrested because the Florida legislature had passed a law that white people were not allowed to teach black people. And so they were arrested for breaking the law because of their schools. And they weren't sent away to jail for a long time or anything. It was like a house arrest, but eventually they did stop having, stop teaching like that. So we're not really sure how long this school lasted, but the schoolhouse that's here on the property was not built till 1898, like you said. But their mission here of education started in 1868. So they had a different building. This was the first substantial schoolhouse that they had for the children here. And it was used for black children. There was another school for the house for the white children.
So when someone comes here to the Mandarin area and they see this schoolhouse, this is the original schoolhouse.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And everything in it is an original. I mean, you know, the roof is not original anymore and things, but the flooring is, the sideboard all is. We still have about half of the original windows that are, you know, wavy and with that old glass. But that schoolhouse has been moved 3 times. So I'm surprised there's any old glass left at all, you know.
Right.
And it's been used for a variety of things over the years. It was a schoolhouse, then it was a home, then it was a storage unit, you know, and now it's back to being a schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. So we're we were very happy to be able to save it and put a community coalition together to raise funds and to be involved in bringing it here and restoring it to a schoolhouse again. And as far as we know, it's the only one-room schoolhouse left in the county.
So tell me, this latest venture to save it and restore it, how did that all come about?
Well, it came about the last time, and actually we knew of it, and we wanted to move it here in 2008, but we weren't able to raise funds to do that. And it was owned by a private owner on Mandarin Road. So we were aware of the history of it. So in 2014, the owner contacted us and told us that he was going to sell the property, including the schoolhouse. And so we needed to do something if we really wanted to have it. And so we put together another community effort at that time, and we were successful. You know, it was a different time. 2008 was a rough year, as you recall.
Yes.
For one thing, and this time, just piece, you know, the Mandarin Community Club came forward and said, "We'll buy the building from the man." It was $10,000. "We'll buy the building from the man in honor of the community club's 90th anniversary." And so they pitched in that much, and then they deeded the building to the city immediately after they bought it. And then the Councilman Schellenberg had some monies available for parks improvement. So we went to him and said, "Can we have some of that parks improvement money to bring the schoolhouse?" So he gave us $55,000. And then we had some very generous donors who gave us $20,000, $5,000, $1,000, a dollar. I mean, we had people giving, you know, dollars and quarters or whatever, you know, anything.
Yeah.
And the Rotary Club got involved and did a fundraiser for us, and they contributed, you know, about $16,000. So when it all came together, it cost probably about $130,000 to move it, to buy it, move it, restore it, make it a museum. But it was a community effort. It wasn't like it all came out of our pockets. We're a nonprofit. You know, we don't have that kind of money. But we organized it and made it happen by bringing all these entities together to say, this is important to save this building. And we wanted to save it because it was a historic building, for one. But the really big thing was it represented African American history in Mandarin. And we did not have that as part of our museum buildings and displays. And so it was like an opportunity for us to start telling that story, because the African American population in Mandarin at one time was majority in the late 1800s. And they have a huge history here, an important history here, and that history is deserving of being told as much as the history of William Webb, who lived on this property, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was an opportunity. We saw it as an opportunity to tell the stories of the rest, you know, other parts of America, Mandarin history that we hadn't been telling.
Mm. So when someone comes here and they see the schoolhouse, what are their thoughts? It has to be something that is kind of mind-blowing, because you wouldn't think, because areas change over the years, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, this was a majority African-American black population back then. But now you probably wouldn't say that today. So
it's 7%.
Right. What are their thoughts? What have you heard people say?
Well, there's a full range, but I think number one is kind of what you're hinting at, is most people had no idea. They had no idea that this building exists, or that this mission of education exists, or that there was a majority population at one time, or that there was even any black history here, you know? And so, I mean, we're not representing all of the black history in Mandarin. It's just the start with the schoolhouse. But that's the main thing, is people are like, "I had no idea." You know, there's like, and the fact that it's a true one-room schoolhouse is fascinating to people, because how many opportunities have we ever had to see one? You know, I mean, there seems to be more up north that have been saved. But, I mean, down here, there's a few places around you can, but not around here. And so they're just fascinated with, you know, how it worked, and how did one teacher teach, you know, children of different ages. And you know, we didn't have electricity out here till 1936, you know. They had lamp, you know, oil lamps. And we asked the students when they come, because we do a lot of school tours, a lot of times we'll ask them, well, what kind of chores do you do for your teacher? And they'll name off these things they do, you know. And we'll say, did any of you boys ever get asked to go out and chop wood for the heater that's in the corner, you know? Oh, no, you can't chop wood. But, I mean, just how life has changed, the children especially. If you were a student 100 years ago in this schoolhouse, more than 100 years ago, how would it have been different? There's no bathroom. The children had to walk to get water and pump it, you know, and bring it back for everybody to use a dipper to drink it out of it. I mean, it just opens such a range of topics. But the pictures we have in there also really appeal to people. And I think, especially when Black visitors come, sometimes you can just see, and they will say, how good it makes them feel to see all these dark faces on the wall of this museum, and to know that what was going on with them was, you know, really important, and we considered it to be important. And then we have, you know, like Mrs. Davis, Nannie Dozier Davis, who was a school teacher in the Black school system when there were two systems for over 40 years, you know. And she's had relatives come here and see her picture on the wall saying, this woman contributed so highly to education in Duval County, but how many people would know it? Or Rufus Payne, who was the first, you know, director of that system. He lived here in Mandarin. He grew up here in Mandarin. How many people would know that, you know? And so when we do have some people that are related to some of the people that went to the school, and they come in and say, wow, you know, it's really neat seeing my family's name on that wall or my mother's picture in the case of Sam Burney, you know? And people want to know more. They want to know more. And when the kids are here, we talk to them about segregation. We talked to them about what it was like, and it's amazing because now when kids come, like from, you have a public school, about third, fourth graders, they come and they're sitting in there on the benches, it looks like the United Nations. I mean, right. You've got people that are from all over the world in there, you know, and when you tell them, how many realized that it wasn't that long ago that Black children and white children did not go to the same schools. They can't believe it almost, you know, unless they've had somebody tell them about it. They really think, you mean my best friend who's sitting right here next to me and is Black, I couldn't go to the same school with her or be her friend, you know? They're like, are you kidding me? And it's just, it opens people's eyes, and it's not that, it's been in my lifetime, you know? Mm-hmm. When I moved here from Pittsburgh when I was in the seventh grade and went to DuPont High School, there were no Blacks in my school, you know, and there's plenty of people around who still experience that in their lifetimes, you know, and thank goodness that's changed. But the little children, the third and fourth graders, it's so far away for them, they don't even maybe know about it yet. So we try to be honest and let them know this was a Black schoolhouse because Blacks were not taught in the same schoolhouse as whites. And, you know, tell them about that in a very, you know, gentle but right. True way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
as an African American, as a Black person, when I went into the schoolhouse, I would have to say that I agree, because to me, I look at education as one of the great equalizers.
Yes.
And education, to know that some people did not want Black people to be educated, to me, just really blows my mind, because I feel that everyone deserves an education and should get one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how many people zero in on that little part of the exhibit that says sisters were arrested. And they'll go, what were they arrested for? They were arrested because our state government said that these white teachers couldn't teach these children because they were Black. And they're like, you seriously? You know? And it's interesting how many, and these are adults I'm talking about, you know, that don't even realize what it was like. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that you kind of touched on is that we, the other thing that people say is that they, it's about the sisters somewhat. Mm-hmm. It's about what was going on at the time that all this was taking place. But the big message is you can't hold people down. People are going to rise above wherever they are, and education is the key.
Mm, absolutely. So if someone is listening to this now, please tell them where they can find the last remaining one-room schoolhouse for African-American students.
Well, it's in the Walter Jones Historical Park, which is a park of the city of Jacksonville. It's located at 11964 Mandarin Road, and the schoolhouse and the Mandarin Museum are open every Saturday from 9 to 4. And then we also do school tours during the weekdays. They bring the students, you know, from school during the weekdays for school tours. We also do adult tours. We do tours for Boy Scouts, Girls Clubs, Boys Clubs, all things like that during the, you know, scheduled times that we'll schedule those things. Mm-hmm. And we have special events here as well.
Okay, so tell everyone your website as well.
The website is pretty simple. It's mandarinmuseum.net. And you can read about the schoolhouse, about the other historic buildings we manage here in the park, about Harriet Beecher Stowe, about the Civil War steamship Maple Leaf, which is a National Historic Landmark. We have some wonderful art here, and it's a great place to volunteer, too. We're always looking for new volunteers.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming.
For more about today's Community Spotlight, visit myhot995.com and click on Hot Cares.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.